and we're protecting LGBTQ youth from something that is harmful and scientifically discredited. And that's really important now because our vice president is a prime advocate of conversion therapy. So it's awesome that we have this law here in Illinois. It's so important to protect young people here from these horrific attempts to change who they are. So we have these great policies, great laws, anti-bullying protections, all these protections, but there's still work to do. And we at Equality Illinois, we're responding with an aggressive spring agenda and offensive to build a strong affirming voice throughout the entire state of Illinois to empower LGBTQ Illinoisans to speak up, to fight back, and to share their lived experiences with everyone, and to keep Illinois as that anchor of the Midwest when it comes to, civil rights, much in the same way Illinois is an anchor in the Midwest for reproductive health care. And just a few things legislatively that we're working on this spring, in addition to the great bill that we're partnering with Planned Parenthood and with ACLU on, the Birth Certificate Modernization Bill that you heard about earlier, House Bill 1785. We're also working on three other pieces of legislation, including the panic defense ban. Panic defense is something a defendant, especially in a murder case, will say, oh, I attacked the person, yeah, but it was their sudden and shocking knowledge of their sexual orientation or gender identity that caused me to do it. So we're seeking to codify a curtailment on the gay panic defense, the trans panic defense, and that bill is sponsored by Senator Biss. Happy to say that. We're also working on a bill to establish non-discrimination protections in jury service, because we all love jury service. But there have been cases around the country where, particularly in California, there was a case 2-3 years ago where an LGBTQ person, a gay person, was removed from a jury because of the perception he would be biased in an HIV/AIDS medication case. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals said, no, you can't do that. That's discrimination. So we're seeking to codify some of those protections here in Illinois to ensure we have those strong civil rights protections. And then a bill that I really think is really, really cool and really fun deals with boards and commissions, which is an exciting topic. But right now, when somebody applies on the governor's website to be a member of a board and commission under the authority of the governor, they have to designate their gender, their ethnicity, and their disability status. We want to expand that to allow people to self-identify their LGBTQ status. And the reason is the governor then has to report the aggregate data on the back end to the legislature. And we want to make sure our boards and commissions that we all pay taxes to support are reflective of the diversity of the state of Illinois. And also to help create a leadership path for LGBTQ people who want to be engaged in public service. And that's important because studies have shown when an LGBTQ person is a member of a public body, that helps with representation. It helps with good policies. So I think that's really important. And last summer, our new CEO, and there's a sheet out in the hallway with the list of all those bills on it, including the two bad bills I mentioned earlier. But with our CEO last year, he started on a listening tour when he started on June 1. He went around to 12 communities all over the state, talked to 200 different stakeholders, and he heard stories of needs, of where it hurts, of obstacles to equality. He heard things like transgender youth in Carbondale having to hop on Amtrak or drive 5 hours to Howard Brown Health Center on the north side of Chicago for basic medical care that affirmed their gender identity. We heard that there, in education, there is no affirming inclusion of LGBTQ people in history. That concern about the treatment of transgender inmates in the criminal justice system, or concerns about the proliferation of hate crimes. So there are many concerns for LGBTQ people, and as we work to tackle them, we also have to remember to focus on intersecting identities as well, to focus on immigrants, refugees, Muslims, women, people of color, because we all have to stand up together and fight together for each other. And just a few examples of what you can do. You did the first thing, which is showing up. Showing up is the most important thing I think you can do. But I think also engaging in state and local advocacy, especially local elections. The president is the president, but so many decisions are made at the local level. And here I want to point out school boards, you know, what school boards can do, especially to transgender students. But also, you know, state senate races, such as in Delaware on Saturday. There's a special election for a state senate seat. And turnout on Saturday in a special election exceeded turnout in 2014 in a regular November election. So people are fired up. And it's important to keep fired up and to focus on, you know, school districts, state, you know, mayoral elections, aldermanic elections, state senate seats. And I really like what Kadeen said a minute ago of also, if you have friends and relatives and family members who live in Springfield, where I'm from, who live in Carbondale, who live in Champaign, make an effort and please reach out to them. You know, talk to them, because there can be such a disconnect sometimes between the northeastern part of the state and the western part of the state. I would also urge you to tell your legislators not when they're just when they're wrong, but when they're right, because that also gives them added support, especially your federal members, your members of Congress, and our two U.S. senators. Tell them when they're right, because that backs them up, and they need that in this climate we see right now. And in terms of just LGBTQ equality, two things. We're doing at Equality Illinois that I would love to have your help with. We're phone banking in support of LGBTQ affirming initiatives across the country. So while I said we have great laws in Illinois, not everyone does. So we're collecting, we're working with volunteers here to call into Jacksonville, Florida, Laramie, Wyoming, to encourage folks to pass affirmative policies in those places. And the second thing is May 6th in Springfield, we are hosting our annual Equality Con. It's a one-day conference that brings advocates from all over the state together to talk about the latest issues in LGBTQ equality. So I encourage you to look at our Facebook page to learn more about Equality Con 2017. We just posted about it today. I think I've probably spoken for long enough. So I want to thank you for being engaged, being committed to this fight, and thank you for rising up.
Thank you, Mike. Now I want to introduce a man who's become very busy. Fred Sow, he's nodding his head, is ICERS, the Illinois Coalition on Immigrant and Refugee Rights Senior Policy Council. In this position, he provides research and analysis of changes in immigration-related policies and procedures to ICER members and their allies, and assists with the coalition's legislative advocacy efforts. He also provides technical supports, trainings, and presentation on immigration-related topics to service providers, immigrant community organizations, and others who work with immigrants. A self-described recovering attorney, Fred practiced law at the Rockford office of the Prairie State Legal Services, where he worked after receiving his law degree from the University of Michigan. He's also worked with the American Civil Liberties Union of Illinois, the Chicago Anti-Hunger Federation, and the Missouri Public Interest Research Group. Thank you, Fred.
All right. Thank you, Representative Fine, and thank you as well, Representative Gable and Senator Biss. And thank all of you for being here this evening. As Representative Fine noted, I've been very busy the last several weeks. The last several weeks have been a time of great anxiety, if not bordering on panic, among immigrant and refugee communities. We've seen a travel ban that effectively canceled about 100,000 visas for immigrants seeking to come to the United States, including two Yemeni brothers whose green cards were canceled and who were sent back to Yemen. During the ban, we've seen. We've seen a mother of two in Phoenix go in for what she thought would be a routine check-in with ICE and end up getting arrested and deported to Mexico without seeing her children. We've seen a woman in El Paso go into court for a protective order, get arrested by ICE agents, presumably on a tip from her abuser. We've seen at least two young people arrested who, despite their protections under the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, including one who was accused by Homeland Security of being a gang member. The only evidence of this was a statement that was obviously doctored. We've seen Border Patrol and immigration enforcement agents feeling newly emboldened to carry out all sorts, you know, any manner of harassment. And we've seen people in the community, parents afraid to send their children to school, not knowing whether they'd come home to their children. We've seen workers afraid to go to work. We've seen families afraid to go shopping or go to restaurants or conduct other business in their communities. If there is any kind of silver lining to all of this, it's that so many people have come forward to show support and show solidarity, including all of you here this evening. Can I just ask, how many of you went to the airport that weekend of the travel ban? Thank you. I was not there the first night, that Saturday, but I was there the second night, and it was so, so heartening to see thousands of people come out to show their support of refugees and immigrants and Muslims and others who were specifically excluded under this new policy, as well as all of the attorneys who also came out to offer their support or guidance to people who are affected by the ban. Not just the travelers themselves, but also the family members who were eagerly awaiting their relatives, or their friends who were coming to visit them. So it's in this spirit that I offer three things three different directions that we are going in as an organization that I hope many of you, if not all of you, can plug into. First off, we are doing a lot of really intensive Know Your Rights education. And it's important to remember that the U.S. Constitution, our pocket constitution here, guarantees basic rights to everybody in the United States. The Constitution does not say these rights are guaranteed only to citizens or only to people who are lawfully here. It speaks of the rights of the people of the United States. This includes the right to remain silent, the protection against self-incrimination, the right to be safe and secure in your homes, and to be protected against unreasonable searches and seizures without a warrant. It includes the right to a hearing, the right to counsel, the free exercise of religion, the freedom of speech, the freedom of assembly, the freedom to petition your elected officials for redress. All of these rights are guaranteed under the Constitution. And all, we need to uphold these rights, and we need to, and for those among us who are not fully aware of their rights, we need to make sure that they are aware, not only aware, but also prepared to exercise them, so that when someone gets stopped on the street, they know that they don't have to answer any questions. They don't even have to say who they are or provide any documents. That when ICE shows up at their doors, they do not have to open the door. If they do get arrested, they are entitled to speak with a lawyer. Though unfortunately, in the immigration context, that means very often a lawyer at their own expense. And in many cases, they are entitled to a hearing, to determine whether they should in fact be deported or to make a claim for immigration relief. So, we have done at least a couple of Know Your Rights sessions here in Evanston. We have several allies here in the community who are trained to undertake these presentations. If you know of anyone who could benefit from this type of Know Your Rights education, or if you yourself would be interested in getting trained, please let us know. There are Know Your Rights materials on our website. I also brought a bunch of our Know Your Rights cards, green palm cards, not green cards, but green palm cards. I wish they were green cards. If they actually were, I would just walk down the street and hand them out. This also includes our hotline, our family support hotline, where people can call to report incidents involving ICE agents, any other kinds of deportation-related crises. The deportation, selection on the hotline is live answered, so that people who are calling can give their information and get referrals or get other guidance, on what they can do and where they can go and where they can get help. So. The second thing I want to point out is that, as Mike and Kadeen and Bridget have noted, there's a lot of advocacy work that we can be doing on the local level. In particular, we're working with any number of different communities on passing welcoming ordinances or welcoming policies that seek to sever the relationships between local police and local government with immigration enforcement. A few weeks ago, Oak Park passed model language that, and I say it's model language because I helped write it, that kind of sets the gold standard these days for what these policies can do. And several other communities are following suit. Skokie will be passing a similar ordinance next week. Now, I know here in Evanston, a similar ordinance passed back in December. However, not to be too delicate about it, but that ordinance is flawed, and it needs to be fixed. So there are many things that were not included in that ordinance and several things that need to be fixed. So I know there are a couple of allies in the audience who are helping to lead the efforts to get the Evanston City Council to fix its ordinance. So I hope that many of you will be able to join them in doing so. Just as we're trying to fix some of the flaws in the policies, even some of the longer standing policies in Chicago and Cook County need to be fixed and need to be upgraded, to reflect the challenges that we face these days. And then on the state level, there's parallel legislation that we're trying to advocate for as well. I'll mention three bills in particular. First off, there's the Illinois Trust Act, HB 3099, that's sponsored by Representative Lisa Hernandez. Representative Gable is a co-sponsor of that legislation. This is comprehensive legislation that would, on a state level, make sure that all law enforcement agencies throughout the state are not involved in immigration enforcement, whether it's local police departments or sheriff's departments or jails. This would completely de-link those agencies from immigration enforcement. And on top of that, it would include measures that would specifically benefit immigrant victims and witnesses to crimes who may be eligible for forms of immigration relief but need certification from their local police departments or other law enforcement agencies or government agencies that with whom they're cooperating to help prosecute the perpetrators. Unfortunately, all too often, when these victims or witnesses come forward and seek these certifications, the law enforcement agencies ignore their requests. So what this legislation would do is specifically say, if a law enforcement agency gets such a request, it has a certain timetable to respond. Give us a timely response to this request. So again, that's House Bill 3099, the Illinois Trust Act. Second bill I should mention is House Bill 426, the Immigrant Safe Zones Act, which is sponsored by Representative Chris Welch. And I'm proud to say that both Representative Gable and Representative Fine are co-sponsors of that bill. This bill would establish safe zones at state-funded schools, hospitals, and medical facilities. In other words, ICE cannot conduct operations at these facilities unless they have a criminal warrant. We do not want our schools to become immigration enforcement zones. We want to keep, we want to keep those spaces. We want to keep medical facilities. We want to keep hospitals off limits to ICE. If ICE is really serious about trying to apprehend somebody, get a warrant. Okay, so that's House Bill 426. Third bill is House Bill 2394, the Student Access Bill, which respects not just the contributions and potentials of immigrant students, but also their struggles. Undocumented youth are not eligible for federal financial aid. So even if they are able to get in-state tuition at public universities, many of them still struggle to continue with their educations. So what this legislation would do would enable these students to apply for and compete for for university-based aid, whether it's scholarships or grants or other kinds of financial assistance. This is merely trying to do our best to try to even out the playing field, though undocumented students are still at a major disadvantage. This bill, like Illinois Trust, is also sponsored by Representative Hernandez. Again, House Bill 2394. Okay, final thing I want to mention is citizenship. Citizenship is as important now as it ever has been, not the least of which because it is the ultimate protection against deportation. Citizens cannot be deported, or at least not yet. We want to encourage those immigrants who have been here for many years, who really should be U.S. citizens to take that final step of applying for citizenship. And fortunately, thanks to the leadership of the three legislators here and to many of our other allies in the General Assembly, we have been able to win restoration of immigrant services funding at least through June when the fiscal year ends. So we are going to take advantage of that funding to promote the heck out of citizenship and run as many citizenship workshops that we can between now and the end of June. And we are always looking for volunteers who can help out, help fill out applications or help with legal screening if you're a lawyer or just otherwise help take care of the people who are in the waiting rooms and tend to their needs. The schedule of our citizenship workshops is up on our website, icrr.org. Let us know if you can help. ICIRR.org. Okay, one more time. ICIRR, two R's, .org. I will say it again at the very end. Along with citizenship, what comes with citizenship? The right to vote. We conduct voter registration at just about every oath ceremony that takes place downtown. We could always use help with that. And, come election season, which actually we are in the midst of when it comes to municipal elections, we do our best to try to encourage not just immigrant voters, but all voters to come out to vote. So that, of course, is going to be essential in the months and years to come. I want to close by stealing a quote that I thought Kadeen was actually going to use. How many of you stayed up to watch the Oscars last night? Okay. I actually didn't because I hate the Oscars, but I found the speech by Barry Jenkins, the director of Moonlight, to be really, really moving. So let me, please indulge me. I'll just read from this. All you people out there who think there's no mirror for you, that your life is not reflected, the Academy has your back, the ACLU has your back, we have your back. And for the next 4 years, we will not leave you alone. We will not forget you. So I'd like to think that everybody on the stage also has your back and the back of everybody else who's feeling vulnerable. But at least speaking for myself, we hope you have our back as well, because we can't do this alone. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much to our panelists. I'm going to go through some of our questions. We're not going to be able to get all of our questions because I need to leave a few minutes at the end because we put the state questions in Daniel's hands and I want to give him the opportunity to answer those. So I'm going to at least get to one question for each panelist. First, ACLU. Hate groups have become more vocal. Are there limits to free speech and assembly? Are there legal options to challenge hate speech? Sure. Hate groups have become more vocal. Are there limits to free speech and assembly? Are there legal options to challenge hate speech?
Well, the ACLU, who has represented the Klan and represented people being able to march, neo-Nazi people being able to march in Skokie, our idea is that in order to get the speech that we like, we have to get speech that we don't like. To put it simply, there is a limitation if it can incite violence, for example. But sometimes we hear horrible things that we don't agree with. We represent or we support the right of places like the Westboro Baptist Church. Have you heard of those folks? To say what they say, but that makes it possible for us to say what we're saying. So we try to balance it as much as possible. There is a limitation. There is a constitutional limitation, but in order for us to enjoy the speech we have to also allow folks who we disagree with, like the person who's coming to Northwestern on Wednesday. We respect that person's right to speech, and the thing we say often is the best way to fight against speech we hate is more speech.
Thank you. Next question, Bridget, Planned Parenthood. And there are a lot of statistics here, so you might want to tell us where we go to find them. Since most people don't read or watch mainstream TV, you must do a simple by the numbers. How many women come to you for pap smears, birth control, et cetera? How can you educate people who do not know exactly what you do and what your clients need?
Okay, so that website that I mentioned called istandwithpp.org, it explains the funding, it explains the services we provide, why people come to us, why they need us, and why we need the funding. So it'll explain to you the wide range of services. Also, Planned Parenthood of Illinois' website, which is ppil.org, yes, had a little brain freeze there. That one, if you look at any, if you go in and look at any of our, it has information on our services, but you go in and look at each health center, it will list specifically the services that we provide at that particular health center. So you'll see the range of things and how much preventive health care is part of what we do. So those two websites are great resources for you to find out what we do, who we serve, and why we are necessary. And again, I Stand with Planned Parenthood, or I Stand with PP.org, also gives you ways then to spread the word about that and to talk to others, your family, your friends, and to your elected officials. And I also wanted to mention, because I'm not sure when I said I have these cards here, I also meant that you can give them back to me at the end so that I can get you in our database and get you on the list. So that's the easiest way for if you want to keep getting info from us.
Thank you. Next, for Equality Illinois, how can I make a difference as a 15-year-old trans man who feels disregarded by his president?
Wow. That's an awesome question. And if you're comfortable being open with your gender identity, I think that itself is a powerful statement to this president, whose policies, whose vice president is, all about putting people back in the closet or acting like they don't exist. But I think it's also, you could also be then a witness to your friends and family and to people in the neighborhood where you live and to your fellow students, if that's something you're comfortable doing, because I know schools can be very intimidating. I think, I don't know how much was missed, but I think it's powerful to be a witness if that's something you as a student are comfortable doing. And also, in terms of legislation, a lot of legislators in Springfield, they may have never knowingly met a transgender person, and they may not understand the experiences of a transgender individual. But that's not to say that they don't want to. Most legislators want to learn, want to understand. So, sharing your personal experiences, your story with legislators is also impactful. Because as Harvey Milk once said, when they know one of us, they vote for us and they support us. And I think that's very, very important. And I applaud the question. And I want you to know that we had a call. Now, everyone at this table, we are with you. Everybody in this room is with you. We support you, and we affirm who you are, and you are beautifully made, and there's nothing wrong with you.
And can I just... And whoever you are, wherever you are, if you're ever in a situation where you feel like your rights are being violated, please get my card, because we will be there to represent you in schools, whatever work situations. I mean, we have an Illinois Human Rights Act that's there to protect you. So please keep us in mind if you ever need us. I hope you never do, but in case you do, we're definitely here for you as well.
Thank you. Fred, this is a two-part question. What can be done to protect our neighbors if immigrant enforcement shows up at their door? What happens to the children whose parents are detained?
Oh, my. This is becoming an increasingly asked question. This is precisely why we're doing this, the Know Your Rights education, so that people do know how to respond when ICE knocks on the door. As I mentioned earlier, people do have the rights to be safe and secure in their homes and to demand a warrant when the knock comes. And I should note here that, very often ICE will use administrative warrants, which are signed by supervisory agents. Those aren't good enough. ICE need, to compel entry into a premises, ICE needs a criminal warrant signed by a judge after a determination of probable cause. Again, the Constitution. Unfortunately, things don't always go as one would hope. Very often, if someone inside of a house or an apartment gets arrested, the children are left behind. And, so we are encouraging families to come up with a safety plan to figure out, okay, if the worst happens, what are we going to do? Who can we call on? Is there a neighbor? Is there a relative? Is there someone else who can be called upon to take care of the children, to take care of finances? We've definitely been looking at guardianship as a possibility. Preparing guardianship documents in advance, in anticipation of something really horrible happening. There have been documented cases of children, being taken into child protective services and ending up in foster care because their parents have been deported, which, when you think about it, just seems like an absolute waste of resources. You know, what good can come out of breaking up these families? And then on top of that, not only spending the government resources to break up this family, but then also the government resources to take care of the children, when wouldn't it be much better just keep the families intact? I mean, what sense does that make? So, if any of you know anybody who could benefit from Know Your Rights education, again, I have the cards here. I have plenty more cards in my car, which is two blocks away. They're supposed to go up to Highland Park, but I'll let you steal a few. But please share this information with them, and send them to our website where we have the Know Your Rights information. Share the cards. Get involved in community education because it's going to be super crucial.
Well, good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
There we are. I should have said good morning, maybe. The first card I'm going to read is a question that I was delighted to see and I'm guessing was shared by others. It goes like this. Please repeat clearly the names and affiliations of the four speakers. They were terrific. So.
Okay.
They were terrific. We chose them because they as individuals and they institutionally are key partners in this work for Laura and Robin and myself on a daily basis. So from my immediate left, from the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights, Fred Tsao. From Equality Illinois, Mike Ziri. From Planned Parenthood of Illinois, Bridget Leahy. And for the Illinois ACLU, Kadeen Bennett. I just want to say thank you. You guys were amazing, but you're also always amazing. So I'm not surprised, but pleased. Laura and Robin and I decided that I would just sort of clean up a little bit, speaking to some of the state-focused questions we got. We got an incredible volume of cards about lots of important things. What we've done is culled out for this little closing the state-specific issues related to the topics of the panel. So there were a ton of really important things that we're not going to get to because we just ran out of time and wanted to stay focused on these subjects. As you all know, I'm available anytime, and I'm pretty sure that Laura and Robin are also happy to continue these conversations tonight or offline. But first, to get to these quickly, the first two I want to read are, first of all, what will it look like if Evanston, et cetera, lose dollars for being sanctuary cities? Will the state show any support? What is Governor Rauner's position on sanctuary cities and places? And the next one is, we have our mayoral primary election tomorrow. What should we be asking of our local city leaders in supporting or resisting state and federal actions? So, according to the Trump administration, municipalities, or for that matter, school districts, that choose to enact welcoming ordinances in resistance of the administration's actions are at risk of losing federal dollars. Now, candidly, I don't think that's really going to stick. I think if you look at the way the Supreme Court has ruled on things like, for instance, the Affordable Care Act, it seems likely that that kind of action would not be upheld. And additionally, the more municipalities that join the growing movement, the harder it would be for the federal government to take this action. But the question remains, what if they do? And what if they are successful? What if they are allowed by the courts? In that situation, municipal governments are faced with a choice. Do we side with a moral judgment on behalf of our constituents, or do we side with money? I know what I prefer. Even though our municipal governments are fiscally strapped, I think we have a moral obligation to first stand with people in need of our collective support and protection. And if that costs money, so be it. So that's a decision. Thank you. That's a decision that municipal governments will be making. And I know that the candidates for mayor of Evanston, I'm pleased to tell you, have all answered in the affirmative about that question. But I would say when you're making decisions about local races, ask those questions. I would also say when you're making decisions about local school board races, ask about transgender policies. Mm-hmm. That was important on November 7th. Mm-hmm. But it's especially important after the presidential election and after President Trump's outrageous actions on the transgender student issue. So these issues that so many people in this room are in this room because of, are anxious in a way that we didn't used to be anxious about, and we feel that anxiety because of the presidential election, they're being played out at the local level. And we have the opportunity and the privilege and the responsibility to ask our local candidates where they stand on these issues, because there are very crucial protections for people at stake and on the line depending on local decisions. That last question, by the way, I want to revisit, asked, I didn't duck this, I just have no idea, asked, where is Governor Rauner on this question? We just don't know. We just don't know. Governor Rauner gets very, very, very nervous when two things happen at the same time. One is that someone says Trump, and the other is that there's a microphone around. So on that point, the next question says, Donald Trump is undermining the established order by creating chaos and so forth. Governor Rauner seems to be doing the same thing. What can we do about this on the state level? What I would say is this. We have an opportunity at the state level, frankly, particularly because we have a Republican governor who will be a more credible voice to Republican members of Congress, to engage in state-level organizing that can affect what happens in Washington. And we need to put our governor on the record. And what I've seen so far in these few short months since the presidential election is that on the one hand, the governor wants to flee that responsibility, but on the other hand, we have the ability to push him. So let me give you an example. The threat, as you well know, from Washington has been to repeal the Affordable Care Act, or maybe to repeal it and then replace it with a mystery thing. That would be a catastrophe for the state of Illinois. It would be a moral catastrophe for sure. But it would also be an economic and fiscal catastrophe for the state of Illinois because of the billions of dollars that flow to our state government from Washington, because of the million people literally who are covered as a result, because of the 100,000 jobs that are supported by that health coverage. And initially, as people like John Kasich and other Republican governors across the country were sending messages to Washington saying, hey, don't do this to our state, our governor was silent. And people from across this community and across the state wrote him and asked him to speak out. And as a result, the director of the State Department of Insurance wrote a letter to congressional leaders saying, hey, repealing the Affordable Care Act would be problematic for the state of Illinois. Please don't do that without an adequate replacement. That was a victory. That was progress. That's important. And what that means is it's fine for me to tell Congresswoman Joukowsky vote the right way on health care, but she doesn't need me to tell her that. But when a Republican member of Congress here is Governor Rauner telling them, don't vote to repeal the Affordable Care Act, that moves the needle a lot more. But guess what? Just saying don't repeal it unless you have an adequate replacement doesn't mean much until you say what adequate means. So the director of the Department of Insurance came before a committee I sit on in the Senate, and I asked her that question. I said, hey, you wrote that letter. That's great. Thank you. We appreciate the partnership. Now that you've said that the administration would oppose a repeal of the Affordable Care Act without an adequate replacement, could you tell me what's adequate? And there were a lot of words that happened, but no meanings. So I said, okay, let me ask you a specific question. Let's say there's a bill in Washington that repeals the Affordable Care Act, and replaces it with something. And that something is pretty good in your opinion, with only one exception. And the exception is that 250,000 Illinois residents lose their health insurance. If that were proposed in Washington, would you oppose it? She couldn't answer. Governor Rauner won't say that he opposes 250,000 Illinois residents losing their health insurance. So we have made an important step in pushing him to oppose a full repeal without a replacement. That's a victory we had because of organizing, and now we're not done. We have to continue organizing and push harder so that they are willing to be clear about what they demand out of the Republican Congress in an Affordable Care Act repeal. Concrete demands from Republican governors will win this fight. This is not abstract or theoretical. It's concrete. It's real. It's something that we can make happen. So I urge you to continue communicating with our governor. The last few questions are as follows, before as we wrap up. Why do you assume everyone here shares your views when half the country did not? What are we doing to talk with everybody else? I think that's a really important question. Just on the programming topic, why did we do this program as opposed to a Hear Both Sides program? That's in response to what constituents have been asking for. It's in response to what people in the community tell me on a daily basis multiple times. They say, we are frightened and upset and angry about the steps that are being taken and threatened by the administration on civil liberties, reproductive freedom, LGBT rights, and immigrant and refugee rights. So help us learn what we can do. And so we set up this panel in a response to those sets of requests, and I'm very, very glad we did. The question, though, still stands. The question, though, still stands. One thing that I really appreciate about this panel is that we didn't spend time talking only about reproductive rights. We didn't spend time talking only about LGBT rights or immigrant and refugee rights or civil liberties. In this moment, this new, different, and I'll say it, frightening moment, solidarity is the key to success. Solidarity. Solidarity means that civil liberties will be protected when those who fight for civil liberties stand with those who fight for reproductive freedom. That reproductive rights will be protected when those who fight for reproductive freedom stand with those who fight for LGBT equality. That LGBT equality will be protected when those who fight for LGBT equality stand with those who fight for immigrants and refugees. But guess what? There's a lot of people who voted for Donald Trump who need to be fought for too. And there are opportunities for solidarity across groups. And in fact, the very principles that we stand for that brought us here tonight are advanced when we all stand together. And the defeats that we suffer happen when wedges are driven between people. When a wedge gets driven that says to someone who worked in the coal mine that got shut down, instead of saying the solution is economic investment in your community, the solution is scapegoating somebody else and punishing somebody else. And so I think this question of what we are doing to listen not only to those who are already physically in this room and not only to those who already agree, but to everybody in this community who is in need of one form of protection or another is crucial, because everyone who's in need of one form of protection or another will be stronger when we all stand together. And on the topic of all standing together, I want to just close by saying the last couple cards were all about what can we do that's most helpful. Should we call our legislators even when our legislators already agree? Yeah, absolutely. You like thank you calls, yeah? Those calls help us make a case. Should we send emails to friends who live in other legislative districts and ask them to communicate with their legislators? Of course. Should we fill in witness slips online? Someone asked about those. Yeah, if you get requests to do those are read out loud in committee hearings, and they give you a chance remotely from your living room to be a part of a committee hearing and a debate in Springfield. Should we attend demonstrations? For sure. And I'll be honest. I feel, as I go from meeting to meeting and group to group and speak with big rooms full, bursting at the seams across our community, I feel a certain level of I'm upset and I'm scared and I'm angry and I'm ready to fight and I'm committed and I'm passionate. But what's the strategy? What's the plan? What's the best thing I can do? And let me tell you, I'm a strategy guy. I love that question. I respect that question. I ask myself that question several times every single day. But I have news for you. Donald Trump is a crazy person. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow or next week or next month or in 6 months or in a year. And so as we try to position all of this passion that exists in this room and all of the energy that's felt across our communities and figure out how it can best be channeled, part of the answer is to be flexible. Part of the answer is to know that the problem we're trying to solve in 3 months may be really different than the problem we're trying to solve today, and therefore I don't think it would be serving that resistance movement well for me to give you a detailed 6-month plan. But what I can tell you about what we're going to need in 3 months is a lot of people and a lot of passion and a lot of commitment. And for that reason, and forgive me, those of you who have heard me say this already, but I'm only going to stop when we don't have these problems anymore. Here's the commitment I've made to myself. It's not a complicated commitment. It's not a strategic commitment. But it's a real commitment, and I ask you to consider making it with me. Every day, do something. Every day, we do something. So today you're at this meeting, mission accomplished, good job. And tomorrow you don't have to spend 2 hours at the Unitarian Church. Tomorrow you can spend 30 seconds writing an email to an elected official, or you can spend 15 seconds sending a tweet at an elected official, or 5 or 10 seconds, but I would recommend read it a couple times and take 15. You can take 10 minutes to have a difficult conversation with a family member or a friend or a colleague or a coworker, or especially someone who you know you have a good relationship with, but with whom you may not agree on these issues, and with whom you're willing to have a difficult and open and honest and straightforward and respectful but firm discussion. Maybe you skip your trip to the Starbucks and give $5 to the cause of your choice that you believe in, or more if you're willing. It's whatever you want. But every day, I promise myself, when I go to bed at night and ask, what did I do today? The answer will not be nothing. Because here's the deal. If we do that every day, and if we start bringing others with us into that commitment, then when an outrage comes down from Washington in 6 months, we'll be ready. So can you do that with me? Everybody? Thank you very much. And I would just ask if we could just end the night by, once again, on behalf of Representative Gable, Representative Fine, and myself, thanking the extraordinary audience in this room and the remarkable panel for the work they do every single day. Thank you. And as you're walking out, if you could just say a huge thank you to our remarkable staffs who worked this event, to Representative Gable's staff, Karen McCormick and Christian, to Representative Fine's staff, Shiva Mozenzadeh, to my staff, Matthew Kavanaugh, and the volunteers, and also to the Unitarian Church for your hospitality and your help. Thank you very much.